Can you become a better parent or a better spouse by using an app for 5 to 10 minutes a day? In today's episode of the Apparently Parent podcast, I'm talking to a man who believes that the answer is yes, and he actually created such an app. And I can tell you right now, it's a pretty good one. So stay tuned for after the intro for my conversation with Matt Larson. Welcome to the Apparently Parent podcast. My name is Iran Katz, and I'm a clinical psychologist, a parenting counselor, and also a father. In this show, we combine the art of parenting with the science of psychology. So if you want to understand your children and yourself better, lead your family into calmer waters, and reach the end of the day with a smile on your face, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Iran Katz. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Apparently Parent podcast. And I have a guest today. And my guest today, you know, when you listen to his quote-unquote dry biography details, may not sound like your typical parenting expert podcast interviewee. But that's what's so awesome about that. He is a technology entrepreneur and an investor who founded and led several companies from software to natural resources tech. He was an Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year finalist in 2012. He's also a member of the Mensa Society and graduated first in his class in the University of Colorado, where he studied business administration. He is also a philanthropist who works with his wife to reduce child exploitation around the world. He's also a father of three children, and his name is Matt Larson. Matt, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very well. That was quite a lengthy introduction.
Well, thank you for reading it.
Yeah. So, tell us a little bit about yourself and where are you from. And in 2020, I always start with asking how are things over there where you are around the world. So how is it over there?
So we live in Boulder, Colorado in the United States. And, you know, obviously, I think the world's pretty aware of our struggles with, you know, trying to convince people that COVID is real over here. Yeah. But in our state, I think we're doing a pretty good job of it. I think things are feeling a little more back to normal. Just obviously we're being careful, but the kids are starting to go back to school in careful ways, I would say. And we're trying to work out all the kinks of that, but it's certainly a lot better than it was at the beginning of COVID, but I think we're all going to be very excited when it's over.
Yeah, and I'll just say at the time of this recording, I'm not sure yet when this episode will be published, but when we record this, it's a month before the election, right? Something like that. Mm-hmm. So with Trump and COVID, so there's a lot going on.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I think it's a good segue of something that was mentioned in our correspondence before the show. And I think this is something that's worth talking about. Yeah, this year, 2020, it's a very, very unusual year, right? But it does hold a special opportunity for parents and children. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. What's it like for parents like today?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I look at COVID as... Well, let me back up and kind of maybe explain myself a little bit, and then I think how COVID plays into it. So our organization is a nonprofit research organization, and we really focus on the question, what things make the biggest difference to long-term well-being, particularly in children, mm-hmm. so that parents can understand that, but then also in romantic relationships so that you can understand how to help your partner and how, you know, and how they can help you.
And by the way, I'm cutting you a little bit because I realized we didn't say what organization is that. What's it called?
Oh yeah. It's called the Human Improvement Project. Yeah. And most people know us more from our app names. So we have two apps that get hundreds of thousands of downloads each month. We have a parenting app called The Happy Child, and we have a relationship app called In Love While Parenting. Mm-hmm. And so, but as an organization, we have a research side and an education side. So the research side is we really focus on what things make the biggest difference to long-term well-being. And what we've basically found is that along with genetics, just two things seem to matter. We can just look at two categories of activities in children, and then we can largely predict their long-term well-being as adults. So by long-term well-being, we test things like anxiety, depression, drug or alcohol abuse issues, anger issues, life satisfaction scores, things like that. Mm-hmm. So we basically found out that two things seem to mostly predict that. And that, you know, has really shocked us. We didn't expect that at all. And so we also have an education arm with our apps where we teach parents how, you know, how to affect those two things so that they can significantly increase the expected long-term well-being of their kids.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah. And so both of those things have been aggravated by COVID. The two things that are most important are being basically are even worse in children during COVID. And so I basically see two types of families. I see one type of family that kind of ignores their, even though their child's mental health is declining, they kind of ignore it and are too busy to deal with it. And there's that family, and those kids probably will, you know, will suffer some short-term consequences, some long-term consequences. But there seems to be a large group of parents mm-hmm. who basically are taking this opportunity and saying, you know what, I need to focus on my child's mental health. And it just so happens that we've had some huge scientific breakthroughs in well-being. And now those parents are taking this opportunity to not only learn how to help their child during COVID, they're learning how to help them the rest of their lives. So for those families, that second group, COVID is actually going to help those kids tremendously in the long term.
So what would you say maybe differentiates between these two types of families?
Well, you know, I'd say in general, you have some families that are just so, maybe lower income families, for example, that are, if you have, you know, a single parent household and they have two jobs, it's really hard to find time to deal with, you know, your child's mental health that's getting worse. So I think, you know, the more jobs that you have to, you know, have, or the fewer parents that you have, I think is sort of, you know, makes it harder. I also think if the parent tends to be somebody who minimizes emotions a lot, then they're going to tend to be parents who don't pay as much attention. They just tell their kids to suck it up. Their kids struggle more and more. And you know, they really don't get any help from their parents because their parents basically think that the way through this is just to tell them to suck it up. So, yeah. I haven't really thought too much about those two groups, but I guess, you know, off the cuff, I would say that those are probably a couple attributes.
All right. So you did mention that the Human Improvement Project is kind of both, there's a research arm and both an education arm. Tell me a little bit more about the research arm. Who does the research? What are your any new projects? How is it organized? Because it's a nonprofit, right? It's not a university affiliated or anything like that.
That's right. So we don't charge for any products or services. We're funded solely by donations, mostly by large donations. Mm-hmm. And on the research side, we really do two categories of research. We do research ourselves. So when we do research ourselves, you can kind of think of it as early research. We can test all sorts of things very quickly to understand, you know, if our theories, so basically we can test out early the theories that we have on how things work. And then when it looks like, hey, this does appear to be the case, then usually we'll partner with a university. Now, sometimes the university will come to us. We're working with one in Florida now where they've approached us and they want to, you know, work, they want to do some research around our app and the impact that it's having on families. In other cases, we will reach out to the university. Maybe we know a professor there. And so we'll say, hey, you know, we'd like to work with you on this project to confirm some of the findings that we're pretty sure we already know because we've already done similar research. But so that tends to be what happens. Now, most of our research really focuses around that question of what makes the biggest impact. So we tend to test everything you can imagine. I mean, we've tested things like, you know, if a parent encourages their kids to eat fruits and vegetables, if a parent encourages their kids to clean their room, if they make sure they do their chores versus parents who don't make them do their chores, all of these common things that parents tend to focus on. And we want to see how much of those really do impact long-term well-being. And the reality is most of them make almost no impact at all. I mean, it's shocking the things that we as parents focus on, that they make almost no difference, or at least it's so small, it's hard to detect.
It's also shocking and maybe a little bit relaxing, you know, it's soothing in a way that, you know, you can choose that because sometimes and in my work, both as a therapist and when I work with parents, I can see how we can, and by the way, myself as well as a father, we can get so hung up in some decisions that can seem huge, or maybe not huge, but big. And maybe in the long scale of things, when you think about your child's entire life, maybe those are just drops in the bucket. I don't want to minimize the effect we have as parents, because I think we have a huge effect, but maybe we need to see things on the long term, the long haul, the longer scale, and on the more fundamental ways of connecting with our children, not, you know, how do you encourage them to eat that or this kind of communication or another.
That's right. And one of the reasons why we started along this line was that parents might hear about a new study every week, right? Or every month. So they hear, you know, this week it was blueberries. Hey, blueberries are really good for you in this particular area. And so parents will rush out and buy blueberries. And then the next month it's saying, well, push-ups are more important than sit-ups. And they'll, you know, have their kids do push-ups. And so parents end up sort of running from thing to thing, again, most of which make absolutely no difference. And they feel guilty about the things they've stopped doing. So, you know, now if we're on to push-ups and sit-ups, and we don't do blueberries anymore, and we realize, oh my gosh, I haven't bought blueberries in 6 months. We have this guilt of all these things, when in reality, most of them don't matter. And so I think one of the things that, you know, why we get so, you know, such high ratings in, you know, in our app stores is that what we're really able to do is say, these are the things that make the biggest amount of difference. If you can get these right, you know, you still try to do the other things. Like, of course, it's good to encourage healthy eating and so on. But if you get these right, you're probably in the top 1% of parenting, at least if you looked at parents from 5 years ago, right? You can very quickly become, you know, an amazing parent compared to just, you know, parents in the recent past, just by focusing on a few key issues. But I think right now parents don't have that framework. So every time something new comes in, they drop what they're doing and they switch to that. And the reality is they make basically no impact at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think one of the biggest things that I tend to focus on in the podcast, in my framework, is really that parents are overwhelmed with advice. You know, I think my mom once told me that when she became a mom in the early 70s with my brother, you can only get advice from your own parents or your friends and from Dr. Spock. That was the only book. And now you have... you have tons of books and podcasts like this one and blogs, and it's really overwhelming. And I totally agree that you have to find information and to educate yourself as a parent and to learn how your children work and how you work and how this thing that is called parenting and connection works. But you also have to find what's important to you. What's the kind of parenting that you want to do, or what your long-term goals and values for yourself and for your child. So this is why I think that the focus on the fundamentals is really important. So what are the main takeaways that we should focus on?
So there, the two things that seem to really make a difference. The first one is basically the level, and so I'll talk mostly about kids in this case, although it applies to adults also. But we can look at children and look at activities that caused a chemical called cortisol, a hormone called cortisol, to spike. And cortisol is used for all sorts of important things in our body. We really need it. But if it spikes due to just one certain activity, it's highly related to long-term well-being. And what that activity is when a child or an adult is nervous that something is about to happen that will cause their emotions to suddenly plummet. So I'll give you an example of this. So if a parent is, let's say, sarcastic once a month, they're only sarcastic, you know, for an instant in time, for once a month, or around the child the whole month, the child can be nervous around that parent the entire month, even though it rarely happens. Mm-hmm. Their cortisol levels are raised because they're nervous that they're going to, let's say, be made fun of. And this actually happened in my family. Once I learned this, I went and I have three children. I asked, my children about this. And I have an older son who, part of our relationship is we sort of banter back and forth. And so, of course, when I asked him about it, he's like, oh, no, I love it. I love kind of going back and forth. This sort of our way of interacting. But when I asked my younger son, he said, absolutely, Dad. He said, I feel nervous all the time that you're going to say something that makes fun of me. And I was heartbroken. I could not believe that I had never thought to ask the question that he was nervous around me all the time. But it turns out that's the big predictor. And there's all sorts of things that can happen that can cause us to be on alert. And so we can talk more about that, as we have time. But that's number one, is how often is that cortisol level raised because they're worried their emotions will plummet? The second thing that makes a difference is oxytocin. But again, oxytocin is used for all sorts of different things in our bodies. We're only talking about it in one very specific case, and that is the amount of oxytocin that was released inside of safe relationships where you don't get betrayed. Mm. So a great example of this is hugs. When you hug your child, you're giving them this oxytocin.
And you get some yourself.
And you get some yourself. Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely a win-win situation. Mm-hmm. The oxytocin and a lot of what we'll talk about, today is either a win-win or a lose-lose situation. So either you, let's say, hug your child more and you get oxytocin and they do, and that will increase both of your long-term well-being, or you don't, and it will reduce both of your long-term well-being. Now, so hugs are a really easy thing to do, but we talk about if you pass them in the kitchen, pat them on the back, give them a quick, side hug, kind of reach down behind them and, give them a hug or something. But the most important thing on that side is having a deep bond. And so what we find out is that if we look at kids and we ask them if they had deep bonds with their parents, kids who had no deep bonds are at a big disadvantage, huge disadvantage. Mm-hmm. Children who had a deep bond with one parent do a lot better. And children who had a bond with both parents do even better, right? That's really, depending on families, it might be a different parental figure. Maybe, grandma lives with you, and so you have a deep bond with them.
So what we call an attachment figure when we think about the attachment theory.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. So that turns out to be the biggest release of oxytocin in both of you. But it turns out that most parents don't understand how to build a deep bond. They know that they want one, but it turns out that they do a lot of things that actually sever the bond, jeopardize the bond, hurt the bond, because they just don't know how. And if you don't get training in how to build a deep bond with your child, the sad fact is that statistically, you are unlikely to have a deep bond with your adult child. Mm-hmm. And that will hurt both of you. It will hurt the child. It will hurt you. And it's, even though these parents, would really want a deep bond with their adult child, are really trying very hard, they just don't know. And we just, frankly, it was really hard to know because the science wasn't there yet. It wasn't until relatively recent technology, brain scanning technology, came along that allowed us to see that what we were doing was fundamentally wrong. So I'll give you an example of this. So, one of the things, like let's say a child comes in and they're upset and we basically try to problem solve for them. We go, oh, how can we fix this? They're crying about this broken toy. Oh, let's get you a different toy. Let's give you some ice cream. And strangely, when we could look inside the human brain, we would see the threatened parts of the child's brain light up in those situations. And we knew that, hey, that's not good. But why is that happening? The parent's trying to help, but it's activating the wrong part of the child's brain. But then we were also able to then try different things, like validating emotions, which is really, really important. Mm-hmm. And then we see when the parent would act in that way, the parts of the child's brain that you know, felt love and made them calm down and so on. Those parts got activated. So it's really just recent technology that's allowed us to have these breakthroughs. So, you know, you shouldn't feel guilty if you haven't done these things, but it turns out, you know, we now have these key formulas so that parents can build deep bonds with their kids and can increase that oxytocin that children really need.
So I have a couple of follow-up on that, because that's really interesting. And it's actually affirming and validating things that, you know, as psychologists, we talk about when we, especially people like me who come from the attachment theory, which is all about creating safety. But yet now you're talking about that, how we can see specific brain regions light up or light down, or levels of hormone like cortisol or oxytocin. But I just wanted to ask, are you describing a research done, there's an interaction between a parent and child when they are both being like scanned in an fMRI, that was kind of a research that was done?
Okay. Well, so usually they do, like, they test adults. They do some testing of children, but usually they figured this out mostly with adults. So let's say they might have a romantic partner outside, and they might have, you know, one person in the fMRI, and then they tell them to rehash a common fight, or they, you know, and then they see that the partner helps them, you know, but tries to problem solve instead of validating feelings and stuff like that. So really, you know, there's been tens of thousands of fMRI studies, maybe even hundreds of thousands that have been done. And so this was, you know, really done over lots and lots of things, some, you know, with children, of course, but I think, you know, just because it's easier to work with adults and so on, I think most of that was sort of maybe first discovered with adults and then validated with children and so on.
Okay, that's so cool that you can see those things. But it does bring a question. Let's say that, well, I am a parent, and let's say that I'm not versed in this field of psychology and parenting. How can I know if the bond that I'm creating with my child is what you call a deep bond? You know, I can't measure my child's cortisol or oxytocin levels on a daily basis or at all. So what are the marks that I need to look for?
So there's a set of skills that, you know, that you need to learn. And so that's really what our apps do. They walk you through the skills. But what you'll see is that your own relationships start getting better. You'll see that you're closer, that you laugh together more, that they get in trouble less with your kids or with your romantic partner. You'll just see that your bond is getting closer. So that's certainly one. The really amazing thing that you get to, that to me, you know, means that you've really got there, and it may take 6 months or a year to get here, is when your child says, you know what, Dad, you really get me. There's not a lot of people who I feel like really get me. You get me. So that's one of those key moments where you're like, wow, they really said that. Like, yeah. I knew they were supposed to say that, but they will, right? If you become very skilled at helping them process their emotions, and that's this core skill that we teach, and that's the one skill that if I had my wish, everyone on the planet would learn and know how to do, because it is the most important skill for long-term well-being, because it affects both of those two most important issues. And that is the process of learning how to recognize when a loved one is distressed. And we think that we're good at this, but it turns out we're actually not very good at this. And when we don't, let's say a child comes in after a grumpy day, after a hard day at school, and they're kind of grumpy, and you kind of avoid them because you look over, you see that they're grumpy, and you're like, I don't want to get involved in this, I'm busy, and so on. Well, it turns out when that happens, the threatened parts of their brain light up. And which seems kind of strange. Like, why would that be a problem? Well, it was a problem because back when we lived in, you know, tribes, right, which really wasn't that long ago in our history, if somebody didn't notice when we were in trouble, like if we kind of wandered away from the village and from the campsite or whatever, and a wild animal was getting close, if people weren't watching us, we were not likely to survive and not likely to pass on our genes. So we became very obsessed with, when I'm distressed, you need to notice. Because if you notice, that means I'm safe. If you don't notice, it means I'm not. Now, of course, in the present day, you know, if they come home grumpy from school, it has nothing to do with their physical safety anymore. But that's the way our brains
Our brain doesn't care about that.
Brain doesn't care.
Yeah.
So, you know, the ideal situation is that when a family member comes home and they're distressed, that everyone's head snaps and they notice that, and they, you know, do in their different ways that to show that they care. Like that, I'm really proud of, you know, my kids for, you know, my family for doing that. So let's say my wife comes in and she's sad. They'll immediately notice that and converge on her, right? So one of them might, hey, can I get you some tea? And the other one will give her a hug. And when that happens, that brain really calms down. It says, I'm safe. Now, you know, of course, the reality is she was never in danger, but that's the optimal situation. And the reason why, let's say my kids do that is not because we've trained them really well to do that. It's because my kids know that they're, if they have a deep bond with mom, let's say, it will increase their long-term well-being and mom's. And so, and with every other member of the family. So everyone in my family is very aware. If I have a close bond with everybody in the family, I do a lot better. And so do they, but I do. And we're frankly, we're selfish creatures. And so we're all driven to have these deep bonds with each other. So when somebody's upset, we know that bonds are built or torn down the most in upset moments. They're not built or torn down going to, you know, an amusement park, you know, taking them for ice cream. That's when people think they're building bonds. Mm-hmm. It's not when bonds are built. It's when they are upset. It's how you handle that moment. And so they know that. So when mom's upset, they know this is a bond creating moment. And, you know, they go over there and they do their thing.
This is a really nice reframing of situations that we want to shy away from sometimes, especially as adults, you know, and understanding and acknowledging that those moments, those sometimes harsh moments when someone in the family is distressed is kind of the best of moments to deepen the bond. If you approach those moments from that place, you know, with empathy and with patience, there's a lot to be done over here. And that's such a huge thing to remember. That's a huge shift in perspective that I think I agree with you. Every parent should know that and should know how to handle those. So, and it brings me to my next question. So we were mentioning the app, and there are actually two apps. So just tell us again, the names of the apps.
The apps are, the content is basically identical. They're just slightly tweaked for different audiences. So the first one is called The Happy Child. Mm-hmm. And the second one is called In Love While Parenting.
Okay. So I love both of those names. And I just wanted to kind of describe for our listeners who don't yet know these apps, and you should check them out because they're great. First, they're beautifully produced and it's all free, and it shows that you put a lot of effort and work in there. There's nice short videos that you can watch, and they put things beautifully over there. It's not like you have to now watch like an hour of a lecture. It's nothing like that. And it breaks down things really in an easy way to understand with nice metaphors. And you just described the moment when your child comes back from school and is upset. And there's a really nice example of that in the app where you're kind of acting, you're doing kind of a role-playing situation where there's a dad and his teenage daughter is coming and he's busy with his phone. So the app is not just telling you stuff, it's asking you questions, seeing that you understand the basics and helping you think things over again. And I really like that. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of the gamification here. It's kind of fun. It makes the learning how to parent in different ways more fun and less, you know, I'm going to tell you what you do. So really, really right. Nice work around that.
Yeah. Thank you. And that was actually a real father and a daughter who did that. Now, of course, they had to do some acting in the thing because we had the father do it in the wrong way, yeah. In the common ways that most of us without training will do. And so you can see that and you can see this father making the same mistakes that we all make. And it kind of makes you cringe a little bit like, oh, I do that. Yeah. Oh, I do that too. But then we also have them do it again the right way. And so because we have these mirror neurons. Whenever we see somebody do it the right way, it actually causes us to be, you know, to have more behavioral change than just learning how to do it. Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, most of the learning that we have, most of what the things that you and I have learned, we learned by watching other people. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Actually, very little was from learning. That we were just, you know, we learned most of that when we were very young, or we learn, when we're in a restaurant, for example, we're noticing how everybody else is acting, and that's how we did, you know, we decide how we're going to act. So those mirror neurons are part of why that is, but it is, yeah, that's some of the highest rated content is seeing that and going, wow, I do that, and wow, I'm going to start doing it the new way, like you know, the dad did in the second take.
Yeah, but it does, you know, I'm going to take, you know, kind of the devil's advocate stance for a little bit. My background is in clinical psychology. I'm a therapist. I work one-on-one with people or with couples when they come for parenting consultation. So, you know, I have to ask, can an app teach you how to be a better parent?
Absolutely can. I mean, what we do is we study people after they've gone through the material, and we see the behavioral, we figure out the behavioral change that they've had, you know, 3 months or 6 months after they use the app. And it absolutely does. They report a behavioral change every single day. Now they're different behaviors because we teach a number of, you know, behaviors. So some behaviors, they'll report a single behavior that it'll change their behavior multiple times a week. Sometimes it's a behavior that, you know, they'll report, maybe they do once a month or once every 2 weeks, but it has significant behavioral change. And you know, part of this is, if you just go look at our reviews, one of the phrases that people will say most often is something like, it's life-changing, or it changed my life. And those are the reviews that they came back later and said, okay, I've been using this for a while. This is what happened. It really changed my family. It really changed my relationships. So you absolutely can. I mean, we have enormous numbers of psychologists and psychiatrists who recommend this in their practice. We have, you know, some of the largest organizations in the world that have lots and lots of psychologists working for them will reach out to us and say, hey, is it okay if we, you know, recommend this throughout all of our practices? And because what it really does is they get a really positive response, right? When you have a patient who's very thankful, they say, hey, this, I learned about it from you, and this changed my life. It's changed my relationships. I now look at the world through a very different perspective. It improves the reputation of the therapist, right? And so, yes, it absolutely makes a huge difference, and we study that.
Awesome. That's so great. So, just a small question that I thought about earlier today. What's your favorite part of the app? What's your favorite kind of lesson? If you have one, I don't know.
There's so many. I mean, so, you know, I part of it, I get into sort of the theoretical side of it. You know, why does this happen? And so we have a theory called centerness theory. And what this basically means is that the reason why oxytocin and cortisol are so critical is that they're essentially the ways that we get rewarded or penalized for something called centerness. So let me kind of describe, you know, how this seemed to have worked. So if you looked at a tribe in the past, when we were a tribal society, and let's say it was in a dangerous area where you might get attacked in the middle of the night, the higher ranking you were, the more centered in the tribe you were. So the chief was right in the center, the lowest ranking people were out on the edges. And so if you got attacked in the middle of the night, it was the low ranking people who were most likely to die. Yeah. Herd animals are often the same way. So a herd of cows, for example, at night, the highest ranking cows in the middle, the lowest ranking cows are out on the outer edges. And so we think, and so when you do something that essentially tells that person, you're not a very important part of this group, that will raise their cortisol. So let's say, you know, if I were to say to you, even though you're in a completely different country than me, if I were to say, I don't like your shoes, that actually might bother you, which seems really strange. Like, why does that bother you? Why would that possibly matter? That has nothing to do with your safety, but it does. And the reason why it does, it would cause your cortisol levels to spike, would be because I'm basically saying you think you're in the center of the tribe, you're not as centered as you think you are. And so that will cause that distress. It will cause you to, you know, fight back and try to get closer to it. On the other hand, if I were to say something like, man, I really like you, you are a great person, you would get oxytocin, because mm-hmm. what I'm really doing is pulling you to the center. So we think that that's really what's happening. Both of these chemicals essentially were all about safety. They were all about getting to the center of the group. And you know, safety is, you know, obviously how we survive and pass on our genes, is that we have to be safe enough to do that. So, yeah. That's, you know, one of the sort of the theoretical underpinnings that we're testing. And there's some other theoretical ones, if we have time, that I can get into.
So I think I don't want to take too much of your time or my listeners' time, but I do think that there's a really nice combination in these apps between the theoretical side and the practical side. And I know that sometimes when you pick up a parenting or a psychology self-help book, sometimes the scale is tipped to either too theoretical or too advice without any substance behind them. And I really liked how things are balanced here in this app, because it's both, you do present the theory side, but without making it too heavy and, you know, not mind blowing, but, you know, it doesn't give you a headache. You're not being lectured, and you do get some really solid and useful guidance and advice, and in a kind of a fun way. And I really like how everything is really bite-sized. And, you know, I don't know about how things are over there in Colorado, but, you know, here in Israel, there's a lockdown, so nobody stands in line for coffee anymore in the last couple of weeks, but you can learn some good stuff while you're standing in line for coffee with this. So this is really, really nice.
That's right. You can just spend 5 minutes a day. And yeah. we worked really hard to cut out all the unnecessary fluff, right? And we tested it with so many different people. Each lesson by itself has probably been tested individually with hundreds of people. So we worked really hard to make it where it's just enough to, you know, convince you that this really is important. So you get enough of the science to understand why, mm-hmm. but then most important, teach you very simple steps to implement it in your family.
All right. So we're getting to the end of this conversation, and I have just a couple of two questions. First one, I was just wondering for myself, how is it that a tech entrepreneur like you go into parenting research and study and creating such a thing? Because it shows that you're not just, you know, behind it and you know what you're talking about. It shows in the app and in this conversation as well. So.
Sure. So yeah. So what happened was my wife and I had a family foundation that we started, maybe it's been 15 years now. And we had focused on that for quite a while. But a few years ago, myself and my co-founder of this project asked ourselves a pretty simple question. What's the most important thing that I should do to improve my long-term well-being and that of my family? And so my co-founder, what was the number one thing he should do? And it turned out neither one of us knew. And we said, well, that's kind of weird. Why don't we know what the most important thing is? So we started a clinical trial. We basically hired a bunch of participants, and then we hired a bunch of experts. And the experts would give us a bunch of questions. And the experts were in all sorts of areas, psychologists, doctors, nutritionists, exercise people, you name it. We had all sorts in there. And so we would ask the experts, hey, what questions do you want us to go ask this participant, Sally, let's say. Mm-hmm. And they would give a bunch of questions. Sally would answer. We'd take those answers back to the experts and say, okay, now what questions do you want us to ask Sally? Back and forth, until we had a pretty good idea of what Sally's number one issue and her number two issue and so on. Well, the weird thing was all the participants only had one of two issues at the top. And that stunned us because we weren't even aware of the issues. And then we eventually talked to some academics and they said, oh, you guys rediscovered what the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and Harvard discovered. And by the way, these two factors seem to be the main issues in determining criminal behavior, drug and alcohol addiction, The hospitals are full of high cortisol, low oxytocin people. You know, people have anger issues, homelessness. I mean, it was amazing. We thought, you've got to be kidding me. These two issues seem like they are the not only the biggest issues in you know, of problems in our society, but they seem to make up the majority of the problems in our society. Like, if we can fix these two issues, you're saying we can fundamentally change the world. And they said that's exactly what it seems to be the case. But we're terrible about communicating. That's basically what professor after professor would tell us is, I've been talking about this for 20 years and nobody gets it. Like nobody, it falls flat. And thankfully, because we were tech entrepreneurs, we knew how to communicate, because it turns out that's, you know, building good software is important, but to really be successful, you have to be really good at communicating. And so both of us brought that skill set to this and, you know, worked really hard to make sure it was, you know, it really resonated with the crowd and caused behavioral change that, you know, we knew was important to help kids. And so here we are.
That's awesome. That's what a story. what a wonderful motivation also to, you know, find out what I have to do in order to, you know, increase my well-being and well-being of my family. So in kind of in that line, and this is a question that I ask everyone on the show. So if you could go back in time and have a chat over coffee or wine or whatever young Matt before kids love to have, what kind of advice would you tell yourself? What would you want him to know?
Well, I would definitely tell him that at least here in America, we're very focused on wealth, financial wealth, as sort of a path forward. And that is not at all based in science, that it is a very distracting thing that actually, you know, that we need to change how we look at wealth. Wealth, you know, from a science perspective is really about those two chemicals in particular, but in a more concrete things, it's about, you know, how close is your relationship with your spouse? How close is your relationship with your kids? And you know, some of these, you know, how many deep bonds do you have with friends? How often do you get together with friends that you have deep bonds with? So I would have explained to myself that the philosophy that I was working under was fundamentally flawed, and that, you know, that life would be better for me and for my kids and so on if I, you know, basically understood the research. Now, the problem was the research wouldn't have existed back then.
Yeah, that would have been a weird conversation to have maybe with your young self. But, you know, imagine conversation with our younger parts tend to be kind of awkward and weird. I do those a lot with my clients. So,
sure.
Anyway, Matt, thank you very much. I had a lot of fun talking with you about your work, and I really think it's interesting. I will put the show notes in the show notes of this episode, the links to the Human Improvement Project and to the apps. And maybe there's anything else you want to tell the listeners before we finish, or where anywhere else they can find more about you and your work?
No, I think we've covered it. I mean, I think we've covered a lot of great topics today. I think there's a lot more in the apps. Like you said, they're completely free. There's no advertisements. We've had, you know, tons of experts work. I mean, almost all of them work for free. Myself and my co-founder work for free. So we're doing this because we really believe this will make a big difference in your family, in your personal life. So we would just encourage you to take advantage of that and try them out.
All right. So as I've said, in the show notes of this episode, which you can find on apparentlyparent.com, you will find the links to both apps. And I really encourage you, it's free. Download them right now as you listen to this and start going over them. You're going to learn new things, I promise you. And it's great and it's fun. Okay, Matt, thank you very, very much. Very much. And I hope everything will be okay over there in Colorado.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I've really enjoyed it. And likewise, I hope you guys make it through this this COVID scare and we can just somehow get to the other side.
Yeah, we will. We will. All right. All right. So that was my very, very interesting conversation with Matt Larson. I really enjoyed having this conversation with him. This concept of creating an application based on science and research about the fundamentals of psychology and parenting and making it available for free to everyone who has a smartphone is kind of a genius idea, because I'm coming from the space of one-on-one therapy and parenting consultations, and there's only so much you can do with that. There's only so many people you can reach with that. Not everyone can afford to use these kind of services, and actually not everyone needs that kind of experience. I think these apps, the Happy Child and the other one, all from the Human Improvement Project, are pretty solid. They produced beautifully, and they're kind of fun to use, and they give you the fundamental aspects of being a better parent, of creating this bond with your children. And I don't believe that this is the only thing that will help you, that if you spend 5 to 10 minutes a day with these apps will make you a different person. However, it does give you the information that you need, the little exercises that can put you on a better track. And if you implement those ideas, and others that I teach in this podcast, for example, or other places around the internet, if you keep those aligned with your purpose, and if you do the work daily of trying to better yourself, reminding yourselves that there are only lessons to be learned, that it's okay if you don't do a 100% perfect job. In the last episode, I remind you, episode number 35, we talked about self-compassion and how we can never be perfect parents. It's always about trying to improve and trying to fix the wrongs that we do. And we always have those wrongs. We always do some mistake. And it's okay to do mistakes as long as we take the responsibility with self-compassion towards ourselves and compassion towards our children, and become the responsible, bigger, wiser adults that our children need. So if you add these kinds of apps to the mix, I think you can learn a lot about what children need, about where you need more strengthening, what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses as the positive parents that you wish to be, as the leader of the ship that you want to be, etc. So if you haven't done so already, go to the Human Improvement Project, or just go to the show notes of this episode on apparentlyparent.com/37. I will put the links to both apps over there so you can download them. They're available both for iPhone and Android devices, totally free, and they're great. That's that for today. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation with Matt Larson. I really appreciate it if you go and share it with your friends and tell them about these apps and tell them about this episode if you found it interesting. If you haven't done so, please subscribe to the show wherever you like to consume your podcasts on, okay? It's available on every device. You can even go to Alexa and ask her to play this podcast for you. Ask her, Alexa, play the Apparently Parent podcast. It works. I tried that. It's pretty fun. And I will see you again next Thursday with a fresh new episode of the Apparently Parent podcast. In the meanwhile, stay safe, be healthy, and have some fun. Goodbye.